you guys, Flickers of Fear time, doing another movie review. This is really interesting because I remember this is called A Ghost Story, and it came out in 2017, and it's from A24. So I remember there being kind of a lot of critical buzz about this one, like back when it came out. And right around that time, I was kind of like, oh, I got to put that on my list. I got to see that because it sounded kind of cool, like the concept of it. And then I sort of forgot about it. And then a couple weeks ago when I did my review, I think it was I Am the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House. And on the comments of that review, one of our listeners, it might have been Tammy now that I'm thinking about it, said, oh, you know, you should watch A Ghost Story from 2017. It's still on Netflix. And, you know, if you like I Am the Pretty Thing, this is like right up your alley. So I was like, oh yeah, shit, I've been wanting to see that and I totally forgot about it. So I went to Netflix and watched it. Now this movie, this is like, okay, so it's A24. So like I said, if you're not down with the whole A24 already elevated horror, whatever you want to call it, then stay way the hell away because this is a really, really arty movie. It's not really even a horror movie. It's kind of like a paranormal drama, like existential crisis kind of movie. It is legitimately one of the saddest movies that I've ever seen, but you really have to get on the vibe of this movie or you're just gonna be like, fuck this. It's like, you know what I mean? Because I kind of feel like this is a real divisive type of thing where it's like, if you don't like, some people are just gonna think it's like really boring or it's really pretentious or something like that. And I can see that those are legitimate criticisms, but to be honest with you, it's like if you just kind of like sit and just let this movie sort of work its magic on you, it's legitimately, it was just like so haunting, you know what I mean? And it's like, and I watched it like several days ago and I'm still like thinking about it. It's just really like crawls under your skin. Like it takes a long time to get going, you know, and I'll kind of get into that in a minute because there's some scenes that I think it premiered at Sundance and then it played like at some festivals and stuff. So it was a very, very limited theatrical release. And I feel like during some of the scenes, like some people are like, oh my God, and they just like got up and walked out. So I can see that, but you really have to just kind of let this one do what it's going to do. You know what I mean? And I don't know. It's just really, really got to me. I just, you know what I mean? It just had some kind of like weird emotional kind of, I don't know. It just made me feel a certain kind of way. I feel like a lot of people that, you know, I've read some other reviews of it and a lot of people seem to have that. It's really, really sad. You know what I mean? It's just a really, really sad movie. So this was directed by David Lowery. Now, this was the movie that he made after, I guess he made the live action Pete's Dragon for Disney, which I actually hadn't seen because I used to love the, you know, partially animated Pete's Dragon from back in the 70s or whenever the hell that came out. But I heard it was really good, but I haven't seen it, so I can't comment. But this was a movie that he made for almost no money. And they just shot it like in a couple of days, like in this house that they were gonna demolish. So they were basically kind of like, sure, you can film in this house for free. So it's a very, very small, very, very independent, you know, production, which I thought was really cool, especially for somebody that's, you know, making movies for Disney, obviously. So kind of a mover and a shaker, if you want to call it that, is still wants to do these like really small, intimate sort of projects, which I think is really awesome. So I guess the idea for this, David Lowery said, because he wrote this as well, was he's like, I got the idea. He's like, I really, really like the image of the ghost, like the old school, like Halloween costume ghost with just like a sheet with eye holes cut out. And he's like, and I liked the idea of taking something like that was kind of like funny or silly or childish or something and kind of putting it in a context where it was like a lot more serious. So he had that idea. And then he said, I had this other idea because him and his wife, I guess, they had an argument about wanting, like, I guess she wanted to move back to Texas and he didn't want to because he'd become attached to wherever they lived. And so he kind of got to thinking about people's attachments to the places where they live and, you know, kind of being stuck in one place. So he kind of fused these two images together, or these two ideas together, and came up with the idea for A Ghost Story. Now, this is a movie that it's very, very low on dialogue. There's hardly any dialogue in it. There's kind of one scene in the middle that's kind of like almost like an expository type of scene. Other than that, the dialogue is very, very, very minimal. So much like I Am the Pretty Thing, which is, this is sort of comparable, I guess, although that one was more a straight up horror, like, you know, a creepy ghost story, whereas this one is more like a drama, but with some supernatural elements to it. Like, supernatural elements are in there to sort of make statements about bigger themes, you know, about loss and grief and about time passing and people with unfinished business, like people who die with unfinished business, things of that nature. So this is kind of like, for such a small movie, it really has just these big ideas going on. So like I said, so some people might think it's pretentious. I did not find it pretentious, but I can see how some people would. And like I said, that's a completely legitimate criticism if that's how you're coming at it, but I didn't find it pretentious at all. So the setup is Casey Affleck and Rooney Mara play a couple. They're married or boyfriend, girlfriend, doesn't really matter. They are never named. I think in the credits, they're just called C and M, but it doesn't really matter what their names are. So he's a musician and she has some other kind of job, like, you know, outside of the house. They live in this house. I guess there's some argument at the beginning, like not big screeching arguments or anything, but there's a lot of tension in the relationship at the beginning of the movie because much like the real life argument between David Lowery and his wife, one of them wants to move from this house. And the husband really doesn't want to because he's become very attached to this place. It has history here, blah, blah, blah. So he doesn't want to move. But they're having like kind of tension about moving. Now, he finally decides to, you know, make his wife, girlfriend, whoever happy. And he's just like, okay, finally we can move, like this one particular night. This same night, they're in bed sleeping and they hear something out in the living room. Sounded like something like fell onto the piano keys. And this piano, you find out later, has been in this house for like a really long time. And, you know, it kind of has some significance. But so it sounds like something fell on the piano, but they go out and there's nothing there. And then after which there's kind of a shot, they don't find anything. There's nobody in the house. So they get back in bed and then there's a really long shot. I think it's like 2 or 3 minutes of them just kind of like snuggling up in the bed. And I think, like I said, there's a lot of shots like this in like the first quarter of the movie, which I think really tried a lot of people's patience. But the thing about it, I think he was trying to, because I forgot to mention too, but this is also shot in like that kind of square, what is it, like 1.33:1 aspect ratio. So it almost, and with rounded edges, so it almost kind of looks like old school home movies. And it also kind of, like, it's not shot like that, but just that aspect ratio gives it that sort of vibe. And it's also kind of like, much like Robert Eggers did with The Lighthouse, where it just seemed like he was trying to convey like a sense of like confinement or being like trapped in a box type of thing, because that's, again, another theme of this movie. But yeah, that and the whole home movie thing like really kind of gives it, it almost kind of gives it a vibe as you're like watching it, like it's someone's home movies that you're like just stumbled across that you're not like supposed to be watching. Even though, like I said, it's not, you know, it's not like aged or not supposed to look like a home movie or found footage or anything like that. But that aspect ratio like gives it that kind of vibe, which gives it another sort of layer, I guess. So yeah, so there's this really big long shot of them just like kind of laying and cuddling in bed together. Like I said, I think it's about 2 or 3 minutes, which, like I said, it doesn't sound like a long time, but in filmmaking terms, that's a very, very long time to like hold a shot. But there are some shots like this in the movie, but I think what he's trying to convey is almost kind of like someone is always watching them. So it's almost kind of like gives a vibe of somebody just always constantly watching them. And like I said, it will come back around where it turns out that someone is kind of watching them. So, you know, so there's that kind of whole thing too. So the morning after this incident, the husband, C, is killed in a car accident. Now, there's a scene where the wife, M, she goes to like identify his body. She's at the morgue or whatever. And, you know, she spends a few silent moments with him and then she covers him up with a sheet. Now, there's a very long shot of, you know, the body laying there under the sheet. And then after a really long time, like he sits up. So he's just kind of under the sheet and he's going through the halls of the hospital and no one sees him. So he's a ghost now, but like I said, he looks like a traditional like Halloween type ghost with like, he's just wearing a sheet with black holes for eyes. So he goes down the hall of the hospital and like this kind of lighted door like opens up in the wall, which you're assuming is supposed to be like heaven or the afterlife or whatever. And he kind of looks at it, but he doesn't go. He turns and like keeps going on through the hospital. So the door closes back up. And at this point, the ghost, like C, is now a ghost, and he goes back to the house that he shared with his wife and basically just kind of stays there. So he's essentially watching his wife go through the process of grieving him. And again, probably the most infamous, notorious, I don't know what kind of thing I want to call it, but the scene in this that a lot of people walked out on, there is a legitimately 5 minute long scene of Rooney Mara sitting on her kitchen floor crying and eating an entire pie. Okay, so I'm just, while the ghost like watches her, because she doesn't see him obviously, but he's like standing there watching her, and it's legitimately 5 minutes long. So like I said, if that's gonna, but there, it's in there for a reason. It's almost kind of like, I saw kind of this one breakdown of it where somebody is saying, you know, the ghost is on the other side and then she's kind of here in the foreground, but you're kind of the same distance away from her as the ghost is. So the ghost is watching her from this side and you're watching her from this side. You're basically just watching her go through this grieving process. And like I said, I think there's kind of a whole thing too about the meaning of life. Like, is life meaningful? Is it meaningless? You know, is the only meaning like the meaning that we give it, and things like that. So little moments like this of just her sitting on the floor for 5 minutes, like eating a pie with like snot dripping out of her nose, it's just kind of like, that's, it's almost kind of like making you sit through like the grieving process with her, even though it's only like 5 minutes long. So after this point, I guess like from his point of view, from the ghost's point of view, time starts to move kind of like faster. So, you know, she gets over the grieving process. She ends up moving out of the house. And then, so the house is empty for a little while. Then another family moves in, and they don't speak English. It's a single mother and her two kids, and they just speak Spanish. And actually I had the closed captioning on because I'm deaf as shit. So I put it on for every movie, but they actually didn't closed caption the Spanish, because I think they wanted to show that he's remaining in this house, and now his wife is gone, and now there's this family, and he doesn't know who they are, and he can't understand anything that they're saying. So it's kind of like this whole thing where it's just more isolating for him. And also, it's interesting too, because one time he looks out the window of his house, and there is another comparable ghost in the house next door, and they kind of like wave to each other, and like they speak telepathically, which I thought was like super funny. I don't know. I just thought that was really fun. Like a nice little subtle humor in there. Like that the closed captioning says no audio telepathically. And then he's like, hi, how are you? And then like the other ghost is like, I'm waiting for someone. You know, I thought maybe, you know, and it's just like this kind of sad thing. So it's like these ghosts, and they're just like stuck in these houses, just like waiting for, you know, the living people that they love to come back, I guess, is like I said. So that's kind of the sad thing. So at some point with this family in here, the kids seem to, they don't see him, but they kind of like sense that he's in the house, and it's kind of freaking him out. And so at one point he gets so angry and frustrated that he starts doing like poltergeisty shit, like big time. Like he just like starts throwing dishes around and everything like that. At which point this family is like, yeah, fuck this, we're out. And they move out. And then after that, there's another, they don't really go into like, oh, more people moved in, but there's like a house party. So there's like a whole bunch of people. They're kind of like hipster type people. And at this point, there's a scene where there's this one guy, and it's just like this really long scene. I think it's 5 minutes, 8 minutes, something like that. And he just has this really long kind of existential thing about, do people's lives have meaning? Because everything you create is just going to be like destroyed. And it's like, even if it's not destroyed, he's like, you know, even like, you know, Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, which people still remember like hundreds of years later. But he's like, you know, even if people do remember something that you did, like a book that you wrote or a song that you wrote or something like that, you know, eventually the universe is going to die. There's going to be like, you know, the big crunch. Everything's going to come down into a singularity and stuff like that. So does it really matter? So it's just kind of like this funny, he's very like mansplainy and stuff. And I think it's like really funny because he's kind of talking about, he's not really saying that there's not an afterlife, but he's just saying that kind of everything is meaningless. And meanwhile, there's, unbeknownst to everybody, there's like an actual ghost like standing over there, like listening to it, which I think is really funny. So then it goes on even more where, so the house at this point, like I said, they don't really say like how long it goes, because he's a ghost and, you know, it doesn't, time doesn't work the same for him. So he's still in the house. The house is, you know, derelict. Now there's nobody in it. It's all falling apart and everything like that. And he's still kind of there. And I forgot to mention too, that one of the things, they kind of established this at the very beginning of the movie, but his wife once said that everywhere that she'd ever lived what she was, she had a habit of, she would like write something on a little note, like to herself. You know, she's like, it was usually just part of a poem or a little verse or something like that. And she would fold it up and she would hide it somewhere in the house. So like no one would find it, so that she would always know it was there. Like just in case I ever came back and there'd be like that little piece of me that was left there. So she actually did that before she left this house, like after her husband died. So the ghost has been in the house, like trying to get this little piece of paper, like out of the wall. Cause she like stuck it like in the wall and then like kind of painted over it. So it's kind of like a bitch for him to get it out. So he's kind of like been picking around at it for however long, because like I said, it's long enough that the house, you know, went through a couple families living in it and then became completely derelict. So it's obviously been several years. So he's trying to pick it out, and then all of a sudden, like, you know, the house gets torn out, like a bulldozer comes through and tears the house down. And so he's just kind of stuck, like standing there in the middle of this rubble, at which point he looks over at the other ghost that's next door, and that house is also rubble. And the other ghost finally says, I guess they're not coming back. And then poof, like the sheet stays there, but whatever was underneath, like animating the sheet, has disappeared. So you're led to assume that the ghost was waiting for somebody. They never showed up. They finally realized that, you know, this person's never gonna, so they decided to move on. But C, the ghost, he doesn't wanna do that, because I guess he's still got some unfinished business. So he basically just stays in this one area, and like a really long time goes by. There's like where the house was, now there's all this construction, and then there's like this huge office building, and he's like walking through the office building, and then he decides he's gonna jump off the office building. And he does that, but then when he jumps off the office building, I guess thinking he's going to kill himself, even though he's already dead, he ends up way back in time to where like these settlers come and kind of, they're like, this is where we're gonna build the house, you know what I mean? So this settler family comes to where his old house was, and you know, it's hundreds of years in the past. They get killed by Native Americans. There's like this whole thing. And so it's almost kind of like he's going through this humongous like time loop, because there's like another thing, like I said, there's another thing with what the philosopher guy said at the party about, you know, Big Bang, Big Crunch, and everything, you know, compressing down to a singularity and then going back out again. So it's almost like a cyclical type of thing, you know. So he's been on this land all this time, and then he gets to a point where he's back at the start of the movie. So he sees himself alive again, and he sees his wife again, and they're in the house. And so he's just like going through this whole cycle like over again. And then it's weird too, because there's like another layer, because now there's like another ghost of him, but they don't see each other. So it's just kind of like this whole fucking thing. And then at the end, finally he gets that, that piece of paper out of the wall that like his wife put in there, and opens it, and, he just reads it like that, and then he decides he's going to move on, and he poofs and disappears. They never do show you what's on the paper. I guess it doesn't really matter. But that was kind of like what his unfinished business was. So this movie, this is one of the, like I said, this is one of the saddest and strangest movies, but there was just something about it. Like the cinematography is gorgeous. I think a lot of people kind of snickered at first, because they're just like, oh, it's a ghost movie, but he's like wearing an actual sheet. Like, you know what I mean? But I don't know. To me, it didn't seem that funny. It seemed kind of creepy. You know what I mean? So it's like, so it wasn't like, oh, goofy. It wasn't like that. It's like, I thought it was kind of like really effective. So just him walking through these vast landscapes, and just the loneliness that you can, and obviously, like, you know, the actor that's underneath it, sometimes it's Casey Affleck, sometimes it's, you know, somebody else. So just kind of like the stillness, and like the fact of him just like walking through these vast landscapes, or just like standing in the rubble of his old house, and just, it just, everything felt so lonely, because it's like there was, you know, there was no way he could connect with anything. He was just like standing there, you know, stuck, just like the aspect ratio, you know, suggested, and he couldn't move on because he felt like he had something left to do or left to say. And he's just there for like eons and eons, and just like living the same time loop over and over again, and being completely unable to like finish what it was that he was doing. And it was just, there was just something really, really sad about it. So if that sounds like something that sounds like you're, because like I said, it's not a horror movie. I don't want to say that. You have to be really, really patient with it. It's a beautiful looking movie. Like the cinematography is gorgeous. It's a very measured, it's very deliberate. it's very still. There's a lot of silence. There's a lot of really, really long shots of various things. But in a way, it almost kind of like, so, but if you get through that, which is like the first quarter of the movie, it almost has like this really eerie, like hypnotic kind of power to it, because it really does make you think about, you know, the meaning of your life. It's like in the grand scheme of things, in the weirdest way. And it's just so strange that a movie this small and this intimate, of this small of a budget, could tackle these huge ideas with just these very simple visuals and just very simple idea of just like a dude in a sheet. And just the fact that they use that, but it really kind of made you feel, I don't know, man, it made you feel like just the passage of eons, you know what I mean? And like your place in like this vast history of the universe and stuff like that. And it's crazy that this tiny movie about a dude in a sheet like can make you feel like that. But like I said, it's, the more I think about it, the more brilliant I think that it is. Because I think at first, and you know, you guys know me, I'm just like, I'm real into like, I like slow burns. It doesn't bother me. I'm not impatient or nothing like that. But I will say, like, the first quarter of this one, I was kind of like, it was getting to the point where it maybe was going to try my patience a little bit. But then it really kind of, I don't want to say like it picked up necessarily, but it just got more and more like interesting. And then after it was over, like, it just really put me in this like really weird kind of headspace. And like I said, I watched it several days ago and I'm still kind of thinking about it. So, I mean, to me, that seems like that's the mark of like a pretty brilliant movie. If you're still, even if the first time you saw it, you were just like, oh, I don't know how I feel about this. But then like days later, you just can't stop thinking about it. So this is like one of those kind of movies. So if that sounds like something, and like I said, A24, I don't think I've ever seen a bad movie put out by A24. They're always worth watching. And this one is definitely worth watching, but only if you're kind of gonna give it sort of your undivided attention, if you're just kind of gonna let it take you on a journey, I guess. If, like I said, it's not a horror movie, it's not, there's no action, there's very little dialogue. It's mostly just like a beautiful visual, poetic, sort of meditative type of movie. So if that sounds like something that you would like and you haven't seen it yet, then I would definitely recommend it and tell me what you thought about it. It's on Netflix still as of this recording. So go check it out and tell me what you thought about it down in the comments. And I will see you guys on the next Flickers of Fear. See you later.